Hi there, and welcome to Polyamory Uncensored, a podcast where we, your hosts, Lindsay Miller
and Katie Williams,
interview a poly person each episode, and we try to answer the five things of journalism. Who, what, when, where, and why, as it pertains to our poly lives.
Welcome to episode 64, where we are interviewing Dan and Dawn. Stay tuned as we talk about the good, the bad, the ugly, and the just plain complicated truths about our poly lives.
All right, so Dan and Dawn, who are you?
Ooh, good question.
Yeah. The short version of that, Dawn and I have been in a polyamorous relationship for the past 20 years. It just so happens that my first polyamorous relationship was with Dawn, and her first polyamorous relationship was with me, and we haven't gone anywhere yet. We've had and do have multiple other partners currently. We have multiple long-term relationships. Some of those relationships are not so long-term.
We've also got long-distance relationships, so, and some that are close by and some that are getting ready to turn into long-distance. So new skills going to be learned there.
Beyond that, I think one of the challenges that you're going to have interviewing us today is that we also have a podcast, the Erotic Awakening Podcast. And I find that whenever podcasters talk to each other, nobody shuts the hell up. So I apologize already, but that's just the way it's going
to
go.
Feel free to jump in. So yeah, so we've got the Erotic Awakening Podcast. We've got books. We've got, we present around the country. We've been on a Zoom thing
binge
all weekend. Yeah, Zoom binge. So teaching and stuff like that because we're missing people. And so we do all kinds of stuff to educate people and to share our story pretty much because we've been doing this for 20 years and feel that we've got some tools to share.
Well, that's fantastic. I think we find that when we have people who like to talk as much as we like to talk, the whole episode goes more entertainingly and is more fun. So wonderful. Please don't shut the hell up. So how do each of you identify?
So I identify he, him are the pronouns that I use. I identify as heteroflexible. The only reason I don't have a relationship with a male-bodied person is I don't know one that I find attractive currently. Other than that,
I don't know. It always depends which community you're in as to how you self-identify. So I identify she, her. I guess I'm going to go with pansexual right now, but I could also go omnisexual. I think it's omni because that means you like things that are not human, as in tentacles, robots, aliens. So
I could go another line of questioning that they're writing down now. So
I go more by people's energy than their gender.
From
what
a polyamory,
throw in there. Yeah,
from a polyamory perspective, we kind of avoid the labeling.
Yeah.
There's, you know, the kitchen table poly and hierarchical poly and non-hierarchical poly, blah, blah, blah. I have both Dawn and I have multiple relationships. I have hierarchical power exchange based polyamory relationships. I have peer based relationships. And along the way, one or two that simply defines labels. And, you know, we could get into this whole thing about the problem of definitions and how it can create constructs that end up blocking things more than it does to create open things. But that's down the road.
That is down the road, though. I used to like those constructs. And over time, because I like structure and I like to know what the hell's going on and give things labels. And I've learned over time that labels help me have a language and try to figure out who I am. But I've kind of started dropping them off over time.
Cool.
Awesome. So what does polyamory mean to you?
Multiple loving relationships. That's usually how we just quickly define it, right? Because some people say, well, I have a best friend that I'm intimate with. I'm like, well, are you romantic? And they're all like, right. No. And
I'm going to keep Dawn's great, wonderful definition, except for she did not add the word ethical.
Oh, that's true.
Ethical, loving relationships. Simple as that.
I'll agree with that.
All right. So what drew you to polyamory?
Oh, vanilla relationships, monogamous relationships that did not work. So, and truly, if I go into my long story, which I won't go into the long story, but back in high school, I had a boyfriend. Now, I'm from backwater country. So poly and all this type of stuff that I'm aware of wasn't even thought of. But regardless, high school boyfriend, we lived in different counties, went to different high schools. He started dating someone else. I didn't have a problem with it. My friends told me I should have a problem with it, that I was being a doormat. Therefore, they convinced me I should be jealous. I got jealous, screwed up the relationship, married a monogamous guy. It didn't work. So, and found Dan, had been friends with Dan for a while, and we got talking and we're like, hey, let's create this new relationship and try this new thing. I think it's who I am.
And the neat thing for Dawn and I is when we started our relationship, although we didn't have the vernacular, the terminology of polyamory at that point, we did have this understanding that we were not going to be a standard monogamous couple, that we were going to be open. I think when we started, maybe we both thought that we were just going to be open sexually. So we started to explore the land of kink and swinging. And we found out that we just were rotten swingers. We were just no good at it.
We talked too much and moved too slow.
Yes. Nor was it that interesting to us. True. So we, as part of those communities, though, we did come across a group called Poly Columbus. We're out of Columbus, Ohio. And we said, well, maybe let's check that out. And then we said, this is what we've been looking for, right? I want to be in a situation where if I find someone attractive who's not Dawn, that's not a sin. That's not a problem. That's not something that we're going to have a fight about. It's simply, I find someone attractive. And if there's an opportunity for me to explore that I have a partner who's supportive of that and vice versa as well. And fortunately for us, and at the time, Poly Columbus was all of 5 people, but they at least gave us some of the understanding and some of the words and some of the terminology to let us start exploring that aspect.
And what things do you find difficult, if any, with polyamory?
None whatsoever.
We have this book. No, called the Polyamory Toolkit. And it's literally because you're going from the white picket fence version that I was raised with, what I was supposed to be looking for, to something that's more open. And so my friends at the time were monogamous, and anytime I had a jealousy problem and I went to my monogamous friends, they're like, of course you have a problem. Your husband's dating someone else. I didn't have good support until I created that good support, right? And found the right people to talk to. So yeah, there's been problems of jealousy. There's more people equals exponential problems until you get some things figured out. And even after I've got some things figured out, there's still things that come up because every day is different.
Yeah, Dawn and I like to talk about our polyamory. We have this, we talk about the enlightened polyamory, right? Which is kind of a tongue-in-cheek sort of way of saying when everything's great and we're both dating somebody that we care about and we both like the person that the other person's dating and there's no conflicts. We have this view of polyamory. It's very hippie. It's beautiful. Aww. The world is love and all this kind of stuff, right? But the reality is a lot of what we deal with in polyamory world starts with us. For example, for myself, as a male-bodied American, I was taught by other male-bodied Americans ever since puberty on that my penis is really darned important. And if Dawn found another penis she liked better than mine, that's going to be a big issue and that I've got a big problem there and there's something wrong with me. So having those constructs. Now, in the poly-enlightened land, I look at that and laugh. But the reality is that's something, those tapes have been trained into me from, you know, from a bunch of other men, from media, from all over the place. And every time Dawn comes back from a date and she's walking bow-legged because of the huge penis.
That only happened once.
As much as I'd like to believe I'm poly-enlightened, I've still got those old tapes that want to hop up and say, uh-oh, looks like she's getting ready to leave you. You better go sign up for some tantra classes and learn some new tricks, right? So for me, that's the problem that comes to my mind is you constantly this awareness. Now, time goes by. We've been doing this for 20 years. Those old tapes pretty much never play anymore. But you have to be vigilant for me, right? You have to be aware. And you have to be willing to trust your partner, your different partners enough to say the thing that you did, I am feeling a way about this thing, and I would like you as my friend, as my partner, to help me with it. Versus what I've been taught is, you did this thing that made me feel bad, so stop doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had to learn early on that stop doing it was not the fix. Yeah. So that was because we would get to a point, stop doing it. Start over again. Get to a point, uncomfortable, stop doing it. Start over again, because that's who we are. Uncomfortable, you know, so we really had to get to the point of we're not stopping doing this anymore. Let's push through and see how we can help each other.
So when did you know that you were poly?
Yep. So mine Like I said, I knew I was different in high school with the boyfriend. Mm-hmm. And then in my vanilla marriage, I wanted to do more to spice things up. And again, we thought it was sexual and the ex-husband was not on board at all. And then Dan, my best friend at the time, I've known him since high school, this Dan, we started talking about different things. And it's like, yeah, that makes sense. You know, why can't you love more? You know, we have experience of loving more than one person and then getting in trouble for it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so we ended up, it took us a while to find the verbiage for it. You know, that wasn't, polyamorous wasn't a word that was used. I think actually the first time I heard it was when we attended a meeting of CALL, which is Church of All Worlds, which was run by Oberon Zell. And they were very much about polyamorous relationships because he was polyamorous. Hell, he's in his 80s now, I mm-hmm. think. So he was one of the elders, or whatever you want to call it, of the movement, if that's what you want to call it. And yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know I was polyamorous until I attended that first poly meeting. I just knew something was that I was lousy at monogamy. And it didn't feel right. It didn't fit.
And our next question is kind of along those lines, and you may have already answered that, but when did you start feeling different from other people?
As far back as I can remember.
Yeah.
You know, in different ways, not just loving more than one person, but in a lot of different ways. So I've always felt like an alien on this planet.
Yeah. I've got this weird thing where not trying to make this longest story. I'll give you the very short version of this. At 14, I didn't have a lot of friends, and I started using drugs, and then I had friends. So about 10 years later, recognized that I was a junkie at this point, and I had to take some steps about that. And I've been clean 30 years since then. But from 14 on, I've not been like other people, and you get used to it, I guess. It's like, yeah, just one of those guys, one of those strange people.
So it's kind of funny because sometimes we'll try to talk about things and I'll say, you know what? English is not my first language. Yes. I don't know what the hell is
English. Right.
So, because there's just no words for some of the stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So where would you say you are in your poly journey?
You know, I'm going to go ahead.
You sure? Okay.
So something.
Because I was going to say ever changing.
I'm hoping it's the same thing that we're about to say versus something completely different. nowhere in our poly journey. But go ahead.
Nope. I was going to say ever changing. So because as soon as I think it's, remember, I like structure and I like stability. It's not. So as soon as I think it's, quote, stable and in, you know, whatever, something changes. So right now, the boyfriend of 7 years, him and his wife are selling the house, getting an RV and roaming the country for a year. And I'm not going to be able to see them because they don't know where the hell they're going to be. So, you know, he and I have to figure out how to take something that was slightly long distance, 90 minutes away, to something that's countrywide long distance with various ways to communicate. We'll have to figure that out. So, you know, COVID hit. I was just starting to date other people and then COVID hit. So pandemic kind of keeps me from stepping forward the way I want to. And yeah, so ever changing and surprises.
See, be in trouble.
But I'm going to jump in, but also mature because you and I have figured out a lot of tools.
My polyamory, the way I perceive polyamory currently is cruise control.
Slightly different.
Enough challenges over these past 20 years that the new stuff that comes up now, the new challenges, I always look at them with a little bit of whatever.
That is
because
true.
It just feels like we've gotten to the point of, it used to be polyamory was a challenge and I would do polyamory based on trust because I think it's going to work. Now it's a matter of faith. I have done enough of this crap that the things, and we have, you know, Dawn and I are in our we're in our 50s at this point, right? So we have had polyamorous partners that have died. We have lost recently. Houses. We have lost pets, jobs. I've had partners have all kinds of interesting, fun situations. I've broke up with people. I've dated people that are the exact opposite of Dawn, et cetera, et cetera. And it's okay. Right. We've picked up enough tools along the way that now it's like, you know, So that I, you know, just not say it's that it's easy. Well, you know what? Fuck it. It is. Oh, sorry. Can I say that on your podcast?
Absolutely.
Fuck, it's easy at this point. I'm going to say that. Even though the times, some situations are not easy. Some situations require, because these are very highly charged emotional relationships, right? Mm-hmm. But there's part of me that knows it's okay. I know who I am. I know who you are. It's okay. You know, even if things don't work out, that's okay too.
See, and Dan just made me very nervous because whenever he says, oh, we're on cruise control, I picture a second book needing to come out on tools because the universe is going to go, oh, you think you're in cruise control, huh? Here's a new issue. Yeah, deal with this one.
Oh, things are easy. Huh? Well,
that's knock on wood somewhere. Right?
On wood.
Well, and do you have any like hopes and goals for your poly journey? Where do you hope to go?
I don't know. I think I kind of, man, I've turned so much into an in the moment person that it's kind of hard to think about the future. But in reality, I kind of hope we stay on cruise control for a while. So there's a message to the universe. I would like to stay on cruise control for a while, knowing that there's going to be surprises. So I guess equanimity is what I'm trying to say, is to not feel too high or too low about a situation, to stay even keel. So, you know, I've had a lot of highs and a lot of lows, and I'm okay with staying pretty middle of the road. But I like excitement too.
Yeah, I don't have any future plans.
So you're more in the moment than I am.
Yeah, there's some logistical stuff that I want to knock out. Being able to take somebody on a date in public, right? That'll be fun again to do that. Traveling to visit some people will be nice. There's a lot of COVID-related things, but not really from a polyamory perspective. We're very much this is interesting. Let's see what happens.
Mm-hmm. So why would you say that you are poly?
I guess I'm greedy.
You know, I like you, Dan. I love that answer.
The opposite of that is, why are you so invested in the limitations that you've built, right? And I'm not saying anything about people that are not polyamorous. I don't care one way or the other. But like I was alluding to earlier, right? If and I see you've got, is that a Christmas tree in the background of your picture there?
I have greenery up from Christmas, yeah.
Okay. Just from I've known you for about 20 seconds, but from what I see, I'm vaguely interested, and I'm going to find out where you live, and I'm going to start flirting with you, right? Polyamory is cool to me because I don't want to have Dawn look at me sidelined when I say, hey, I'm really into that host. And, she, you know, I want her to say, cool, because I got shit to do, so get out of the house for a while, okay? Or for her to say, damn, I got designs on her too. You got to get out of the way. You can't be cock blocking me, man. That's cold. Or whatever it is, right, to look into that. And I apologize if this makes you uncomfortable.
No, that's totally fine.
I don't.
People hit on Lindsay, so it's a sort of a nice trick.
Oh, well, there we go. Each his own. So this idea of, I tell you a great example of why, what are the big light bulb moments for me of why this was a reasonable and it just kind of a made sense lifestyle choice. And two quick ones, real quick. One, I remember very early in my relationship with Dawn, I was riding down the road and she was next to me. And I noticed somebody that I found super attractive. And I found myself, I'm staring at this person that I found super attractive. And what my brain said, dude, don't let Dawn catch you, because that's what I was raised with. And when I looked at Dawn to see if she caught me, she was checking out the same person. So that was that first light bulb. The second light bulb was, I dated a woman, and we actually lived with a woman for a number of years who was nearly the opposite of Dawn, with from a sexuality perspective and all kinds of different aspects, the very much the opposite of Dawn. That was a joy to say, I don't have to, just because I love chicken dinner doesn't mean I always have to eat chicken dinner. Sometimes I can have fish dinners. Sometimes I can try being vegetarian for a while. And although that was a little bit challenging, you know, that was one of the challenges for Dawn, simply because if you really like this person who's the opposite of me, you probably don't like me.
That was hard. Yeah.
But that's why we do polyamory.
So, and well, one of the things I was going to throw in there, though, is that how do I know I'm polyamory? How do I know I'm polyamorous? Is because I know I'm not monogamous. Mm-hmm. I mean, in my 14-year monogamous marriage, I ended up cheating on my husband at the end because I fell in, I don't know that I fell in love with the other person, but there was feelings. Mm-hmm. And I did not want to be in that sort of relationship again where I couldn't act on those impulses or at least talk about those impulses or share about them without the other person totally losing their mind. So, and then to find out after the divorce that he had also cheated on me, I'm like, what the hell? I would much rather have a relationship that's designed to where if that's going to be normal, then let's make it normal. So, and be able to talk about it and design something that's healthy instead of, I mean, how many people do you talk to about poly that are like, oh my God, how can you do that thing? But if you talk about cheating, it's like, oh yeah, you know, cheating seems to be a little more acceptable than ethical multiple relationships. And I needed ethics in it. I needed to make sure I wasn't hiding things. I didn't want to feel like someone else was hiding things, even though cheating can happen in polyamory. I've had it done to me. It's not pleasant. It makes no sense. But that's how I know I'm poly.
And our last question we usually ask is, why did you agree to be interviewed? Because for the first year of this podcast, I was constantly messaging people. We both were, who are like, hey, could you be on the podcast? Could be on the podcast. But you guys actually messaged me. So I guess what I should ask is, why did you ask to be on the podcast?
Oh, is this where we get to pitch our book?
Yeah, absolutely, if you'd like to.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about it more, I think, in the second half.
Yeah. Oh, well. One of the reasons, I think really the primary reason, no bullshit, we reached out to you guys is we've written a new book about polyamorous dating and we wanted to share that with people, right? And we're a big fan. I mean, Dawn and I have a podcast. We've been around for a little while at this point. We're big fans of the idea of when the water rises, all ships rise with mm-hmm. it, right? And we feel the same way about podcasts. It's not like people are going to listen to your podcast and then say, oh, I'll never listen to another podcast again, right?
It'd
be particularly dumb because it's a polyamory podcast. but I think so it just seemed like a great way to get a hold of people that might be interested in it.
Absolutely. And, you know, this year we're reaching out to podcasts that we enjoy. And this year we don't have the opportunity to go to events and talk. So we are kind of getting more on the board with Zoom and podcast and things like that, simply because, I mean, we feel like we have something to share. Why go through all this stuff if we're not sharing the stories? So the experiences, it seems to help people in general. And that's kind of like a life goal of ours.
So what's the name of the book and where can people find it?
Well, it depends which book. So the one that we do have out is the Polyamory Toolkit. So that's the first one. And then the one that we just released is the Polyamory Dating Guide. So that one is in print and probably a couple of more weeks, we will actually have it out and available. So it'll be on our website and it'll be out on Amazon.
Very cool. Okay. We're going to take a quick short break and we'll be right back.
Okay.
Polyamory Uncensored is excited to announce a brand new product. We have designed a planner and journal specifically geared for polyamorous individuals. If you're a fan of the podcast, you know that I love recommending journaling to our guests and audience members. After about the 50th time or so I caught myself suggesting it, I thought to myself, there should be a journal specifically designed for us polyamorous folks. One that includes a planner, because of course we be planning, and one that prompts us to go deep into our poly lives. You know, the good, the bad, the ugly, the just plain complicated truths. And I wanted to put together a space where you could go if you needed to vent out all of those really hard poly drama feelings. So I designed the Polyamory Uncensored Planner and Journal. This little book includes a full year planner for the year 2021, as well as self-discovery pages, guided journal with polyamory themed prompts and resource guide pages so that you can keep track of the books and podcasts and websites that you find helpful in your poly journey. Get yours today for yourself or the thoughtful polyamorist in your life at tinyurl.com/poly2021. That's tinyurl.com/poly2021. In doing so, you support me and this podcast. Thank you so much. I love you. Bye. All right, we are back with Dan and Dawn. And I guess I just wanted to ask, first off, a little bit about your books. So when did the Polyamory Toolkit come out?
Last year, I think. Oh, let me grab it. So let me see. Did we put
2 years ago, honey.
Yeah, 2019.
Yes.
So cool.
And what's that all about?
So when Dawn and I got started, as we mentioned, at least in our neck of the woods, there weren't a lot of people talking about polyamory, using the language and such. And we went in. We went to an event in Indiana, a polyamory event, and we went to a class called, doesn't matter what it was called, but it was about, you know, what about jealousy,
yeah.
Right?
I was like, where are you going? Okay, I remember this.
And the class was about jealousy, and it was about, doesn't jealousy suck? And we were like, oh, yes, yes, it does suck. And isn't jealousy hard? And yes, 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 it is hard. And here's a definition of jealousy, and here's jealousy throughout history. And they made some acknowledgement about King Henry VIII, which I still don't know why they bothered with that. But what they didn't do was say, here's how to deal with jealousy when it rears, right? They did do one positive thing, which was say jealousy isn't a sin. Even for polyamorous people, you're allowed to be jealous. Don't beat yourself up for that. But they didn't really provide any tools for what we could do about that jealousy.
So we walked out of that workshop going, yeah, jealousy sucks. I knew that when I walked in. So
we started to actually start thinking, and that's just kind of the way that we think in general, is if there's a situation, if there's a problem, how do you resolve that? What is a tool you could use to do that? We ended up developing a class called 8 Poly Tools, and we presented with that for a while. And people would say,
yeah.
Oh, I love this tool of managing expectations and draft emails and this and that, but what about this and what about that? And we're like, whoa, that's a great tool. So that we ended up with 8 Poly Tools and then 8 more Poly Tools. And eventually, we said, you know, we should just start writing this stuff down. And that's where the book came from. And it ends up with 25 different tools for a variety of different people that you can apply to different polyamorous relationship issues, challenges, et cetera, right? Plus a bunch of stories in there because we love stories. So we put stories in there.
We're definitely storytellers. So, and some of the tools are that we use from the very beginning. And then some we've just recently found in the last couple of years. So, you know, tools that I really wish I had thought about or known about at the beginning. It would have made life so much simpler. So I want to get those out to people because there's a lot of people starting at the beginning. And to know about the stuff that we didn't figure out until 16 years in, I mean, that's just going to be so beneficial. And to have that many tools, not everyone is going to work for every person, but there's so many different things in there that something will speak to someone.
Yeah, there's, like, for example, one of Dawn's favorite tools is the compersion journal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a big fan. It doesn't particularly work well for me, but that's okay because there's 24 other tools that I can look at and say, you know what? I don't like compersion journal so much, but I sure like this or I sure like that.
Mm-hmm.
I was just going to say, could you give us an example or two of what kinds of tools these are so that people kind of get a sense of, if they want to get the book, what they would be getting?
So Dan mentioned the compersion journal, and what that is it's like a joy journal, and it is literally a physical journal. And because I was looking back on all my old journals, we were moving again. I found my box full of them. I was reading them and I'm like, oh my God, what a crazy person. Why am I doing polyamory if I am always in angst, you know? And I, of course, I'm not looking at the dates on them. The dates are not every single day, right? You only tend to journal when it's something you have to work through in your head. And what I decided to do was I'm going to start focusing on compersion and joy and the good things of polyamory. I bought me a pink book because I couldn't find purple. And every time something in our poly life brought me joy, I wrote about it. And what ended up happening was my focus started being on joy instead of the issues. It kind of like changes your energetic perspective of what you're looking at. And that really, really helped me. And to this day, I still look for the pieces of joy that work out. That was an early on one because with my spiritual background, I do a lot of writing to see what works. Mm-hmm. And so writing is very powerful for me. And that one really helped.
And the way Dawn explained it is pretty much like how the entire tool book is written. We introduce a tool, we introduce why you might find it useful. We give you real life situations from Dawn and I, how we use this tool or why this tool came up or why we needed this tool. and then why it's important. So just going through the tools a little bit and not, or experience it differently, breaking habitual patterns, uncomfortable versus wrong. Don't take things personally. That was a fun one. Managing surprises, manual mode, work from a place of assistance, fair versus equal, et cetera, et cetera. Porch time's another one. And just all these different aspects of things that we've applied to throughout our journey that have just got us to the point now where it's cruise control.
Nice. And so what is your new book, Polyamory Dating Guide, about?
How do you laugh at that?
It was actually kind of fun because as we wrote the book, we did a little research because Dan and I are very much writers that write about our experience. That's why we share so many stories. We don't write about theory. We don't write about what people think. We don't write about, I don't know, research that may have been done or whatever. It's our personal stories. And so while doing the research on different applications, we actually went out there and did the applications and the online dating and the stuff like that. So it was kind of fun.
Part of it for me is that my biggest limitation on dating is time. It's time management. It's the calendar is, and now of course it's COVID, but it's time, right? And I kept getting on a variety of poly boards and Facebook groups and constantly people are like, oh, I can't find anybody to date. And the one that really pushed me into, we got to write a book, is I kept seeing male-bodied people posting, well, nobody will date me because I'm a guy. Girls have it so easy. And me and Dawn looked at each other. We're like, you know, who are these people?
Because I'm a girl and I don't have it easy. Dan has it easy, but it's his personality and his view on life and his, you know, he really does draw people toward him, which is why time is his big, you know, thing. And for me, it's just so hard because I guess I'm just weird and it's hard to draw the right people. So, you know, but we were hearing that, you know, I can't find people because I'm a geek. I can't find people because I'm an introvert. I can't find people because I'm over 40. I can't find people because, you know, all these things. And we're like, you know, that, and add to that, I'm hearing all my girlfriends go, oh my God, another guy just sent me a, you know what I mean, pick, showing their favorite feature. You know, I just got another one of those picks, or someone else going, didn't they read my profile? Or, you know, this guy's profile was empty. Why does he think I'm going to write on back? What kind of picture? You know, and I'm hearing all these complaints from women wanting to find people, and not just women, you know, there's guys thrown in there too, but it's mainly my girlfriends. And I'm like, man, we got to give people some hints on what other people are looking for, how to put their best foot forward, because there's people out there looking, and right now it's mostly online. So even though we talk about in person as well, and let's give them some clues.
And we didn't want.
Please tell me that you told people not to put dead animal pictures in their image profiles.
Isn't it fun that you have to say that? Isn't it fun that you have to point things like that out?
I feel like that might be a Midwestern thing, though. We're all from the Midwest. Hunting is a big culture. Is that a thing in other states? I don't know. I mean, maybe people will tell us, but I'm like, do they have this problem in New York? I don't think they do.
I don't know.
And the fun thing is, it's not a book that's taken from the attitude of, you guys suck at dating, here's how to not suck. It is more of an attitude of, here's some things that you can try. Here's some things that have worked really well for me. I like I said earlier, right? When I was younger, I couldn't get dates at all. Now I can't schedule. I don't have, my schedule's not big enough for them all. What's the difference? What happened to Dan? Mm-hmm. And we look at that, and we look at Dawn, who, I don't want to portray her as a slut, but she is sexually available. And happy to, and fun, and enjoyable.
Here, I think.
And she can't get a date for nothing. And what is the difference there? What is it that people are, is it something that we're putting forward, or is it something other people are putting forward, or is it some middle ground? So how do you write that profile? It's so much fun when you go out there to any of the Facebook groups or the Reddit groups, or the dating groups, and say, you know, I can't just, if I went out there and post, hey, I'm Dan. I'm in Ohio looking for somebody to do some stuff with. Hit me up, yo. I am one of 100 posts that get posted like that. And I might be a great guy and just not good at communicating what it is. You know, when someone says I'm open for anything, they don't realize that the flip side of that is I don't really know what the hell I want. And I have left you no way to engage with me, right?
That's the other step that we talk about. So, you know, one of them is that there's a lot of great people out there. And like I said before, so let's help you put your best foot forward so people can discover you. Mm-hmm. And then you just said something and I totally lost my train of thought.
About you being a slut?
No, we went past that.
Okay, good. How have I been doing with you for 20 years?
I don't know.
Because I know you. Anyway, so finding out, looking at yourself, having that ability to look at yourself and put that best foot forward and say, you know, here's a profile that might be of interest to you. Along the way, right, we also went through and found a lot of polyamory sites, dating sites that I really didn't know were out there. Everybody knows about OkCupid and, you know, the common sites, but there's 4, 5, 6 different polyamory focused dating sites as well that we took a look at. That was fun.
That there's hardly anybody on. So because people don't know about them or they're spread so thin because there's so many, you know, so yeah. So we covered a lot of that.
Yeah. So we talk about how to meet in real life, because that's going to happen again, how to meet people in online. And we took one of the differences we did with this book that we've never done before is we've always said we write from experience, and that's legitimate, right? I personally, that's we're not going to debate it. It's the way we are. I'm not going to write a theoretical paper about how to date people. I'm going to tell you this is the experience that I have. But one of the things we recognized is that the experience of a white hetero 55-year-old Dan doesn't necessarily translate to everybody. So we reached out to some friends of ours that were of a diverse background and diverse nature. What's it like for a person who identifies as a Black woman to date? What's it like as a gay furry to date? What's it like as a queer mistress to date? We reached out to these friends, and I want to be clear, because I think it's important, we didn't ask them to do us a favor. We paid them to contribute to our book. Mm-hmm. And we have their contributions in there as well. I think a lot of what we share can be applied to anybody, but I also want, if you have a specific diverse background, that maybe you'll hear your voice as well.
Mm-hmm. And that really added to the book. So, and then I also just wanted to mention that I mentioned about how it's tough to date over 40 and how it's tough to date mm-hmm. as an introvert and things like that. I did write things about that. So, because dating over 40 is its own thing, right? Our dating pool actually gets smaller, and it's for various reasons, which I write about. And, you know, we as older people may be going through body image issues as things change and stuff like that. So I talk about that. We have a workshop called Being a Poly Introvert, I think. And I forget what it's titled, but I ended up writing a chapter about that too, because introverts do have their own challenges. And I write to extroverts saying, give us a chance. This is how we're a little different. You don't really see us in media because we're quiet. So it's usually extroverted people that you see in the media and how to, you know, be with them. So let me tell you how introverts are a little different, and this is how you can get beyond it. Introverts, you don't usually like to be on the telephone. Here are some other clues that, you know, some other tools that you can use to stay in touch with people.
Yeah, and we're as guilty as anybody of saying, hey, I don't know how to meet people. Oh, you got to go out. You got to go to that poly meetup group. You got to go to this event. You got to go to that event. If you want to meet people, you got to go out. And we're sitting here thinking, well, we're the most introverted people. Well, we are pretty introverted ourselves. Would we take that advice? So we talk about that some as well.
Mm-hmm. But I think, Dawn, you make a really good point about the challenges of dating over 40. I'm about the same age as you are. And I've had zero luck on online dating, but meeting people in real life has been great for me, because when you're actually physically present with people, you see them and experience them in a different way than just on the internet. And I think that's a real challenge. And it is a challenge that is not equally distributed across genders.
Yep, I agree with that too. And all the partners that I have met in person. And I think one of the things that we talk about is appropriate. Is that the word we use? Appropriate confidence.
Yep.
Because we both have the belief that confidence is sexy. Confidence online can also come across as
arrogance.
And I think I scare people sometimes. As I get older, I give less. I don't
Less bullshit is what you're
saying. I get so many more fucks now. Like something happened somewhere around mid-40s where it was like, oh, I give a shit like 20% of what I ever gave a shit before.
Right. And that can be scary for other people. Oh, she speaks her mind. She has thoughts. And that confidence, I think, can come across as scary to people. At least that's what I've been told. But in person, you say those things with a smile. You have opening energy. You have welcoming energy. And it comes across so very different. So yeah, everybody, all my partners I've met in person. So not saying online does not work, because obviously it does. But
yeah, and I'm a dirty millennial and all of my partners I met online.
But that's how, you know, that's how it works. So some tools work better for other individuals.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. Absolutely.
I also always like to tell people who talk about like dating issues that patience is a virtue, because there have been a roller coaster of levels of my partner having four partners and me having zero, me having five partners and him having one or something like that, you know, like, and so like it really fluctuates. And if you think going into polyamory the first week you're going to get a long-term committed partner, you're just not. Like, it takes a while.
It does take a while. And
it's not gonna, if you're in a existing relationship, an existing nesting partner, an existing marriage, the chances of the two of you finding somebody in the same week are pretty much zero.
That is true. And you bring up a point, something we forgot to mention that we do discuss in this book that a lot of books don't, is dating as a couple.
Yeah. Right? There's a lot of thoughts about dating as a couple and obvious terms of unicorn hunting and that kind of thing comes up. And regardless of that, one of the most common questions we see on poly groups is, me and my significant other are looking for our forever third. How do we find them? Mm-hmm. And what I see is sometimes people respond by saying, hey, shithead, you are effing unicorn hunter and I want to kill you and you should die.
Get off my group.
Okay, maybe they're not that aggressive, but they certainly are. I've seen many groups where it says, if that is what you're going to say, you are not allowed on this group. Go away. What we decided to do was, and we say, look, there are some challenges. There are some bad people and bad things that happen as a result of unicorn hunting. Let's educate people so that if you've decided I'm going to date as a couple, well, How do you do that ethically?
And we can talk about that, because we did that for the first 8 years, right? So we did date as a couple, and we could still date as a couple. I mean, we date individually now, but that doesn't rule out us dating as a couple again if we find the right person.
And there are ways to, there's ethical aspects to take a look at. There's, you know, there's get out of the fantasy and what does this really look like? So we try to present it from both the, here's the harsh reality of it. Don't be, there's a reason that unicorn hunters have such a bad rap. Don't be those people. The flip side is, we know we have a number of friends that
are
unicorns that have gone from being a couple, finding a third, and now they're a trio. And it couldn't have been, and everybody's happy, right?
And we have the friends that are the unicorns that are like, I'm looking for a couple, but all these groups have banned couples looking for what I'm looking for. So how do I find them? So, you know, there's so many views of how people do these things, and we just want to help people get together.
Yeah. And how to do it ethically and how to do it as compassionately as possible.
That sounds really useful.
Yeah, for sure.
I tell you, I'll be honest with you, this is the area where I'm just gearing up for the backlash, right? And we'll see how it goes, right? Maybe people will take time to actually listen to what we're saying. I've noticed that in America lately, it doesn't take much before the social media storm kind of jumps on your ass. I tried to invite some friends out to play a card game called Trump the other day, and they were not impressed. They were just so mad at me. I don't understand.
Stop.
Well, it's not even called that, is it? It's a play in spades, right?
Yeah,
you Trump
like
somebody?
That. Yeah.
We'll just edit that part out. Oh, wait, it's not our podcast. Damn it, I can't edit this.
Have you guys published any other books? I feel like you had a couple, right? What other books have you written?
The only other one that we've written a book about power exchange some years ago, and the other one that we've just written, which we debated about, well, as we were writing the dating guide, it's like, you know what? We better put something about flirting out there as well. And the flirting book we just did is this little 30-page flirting book, yeah, for alternative people, right?
One of the
areas that Dawn and I run around with, I might well be asked to tie you up and spank you prior to learning your name. That's a different kind of flirting than the kind that when you go to a bar and can I buy you a drink?
Yeah.
But flirting is that language of getting to know each other and beginning that energetic exchange, right? That in itself, it can be a lot of fun, but it's also, we could teach you how to date all day long. And you've got the best profile in the world and you're making contact and you know, the person goes, wow, I loved your profile. I really like that picture of that dead moose in the background too. I'm so into it. And you're like, cool. How are you? That's so interesting, you know, so having that ability the little flirting guide is just something we put together. We put it out there on our website. It's a freebie for people that support our podcast. Just go get it. It's just something that we think was fun for us to work on.
I do want the disclaimer though, that one is written more for kinksters. So, you know, if you flow that way, it will help everybody. Just know the language.
Yeah, absolutely.
Leans more towards, you know, kinksters.
All right. And what's the website where people can find it?
Erotic Awakening. That's where our books, where our podcast, where we are.
Our presentation.
Presentations, blah, blah, blah.
Anything we produce is there. So eroticawakening.com.
And what kind of classes do you teach?
We've been very fortunate over the past 16, 17 years of traveling around. I'm going to say we travel internationally. That just means we get to go to Canada once in a while.
It's a passport when you say it that way.
Yeah. We're U.S.-based for podcast listeners that are not in the U.S. We've been very fortunate that our presenting started because we were invited to present at a place, Ancient Exchanges of Nature, it was very much a spiritual retreat of some sort. And there was a class on Grandmaster Flamboyeau is now going to talk about teaching you how to speak with trees. After that, Dan and Dawn are teaching Spanking 101. That's where we got started.
Yep. And we cover a lot of stuff. I mean, we're very, I don't even know what word to use.
Esoteric.
We're into a lot of things. So we teach on power exchange. We teach on kink a little bit more on the mindfulness involved in kink rather than skills.
A lot of polyamory classes.
A lot of polyamory.
Well.
And what I was going to do in Canada this year is that we do stuff on sacred sexuality. So I was actually going to be running vulva circles. So I don't call them women's circles anymore. You know, they're vulva circles. And it was all about getting in touch with self through self-touch. And so that was going to be fun. And so we do, a lot of different.
My male body brain transcribes that into a bunch of women sitting around masturbating. And although that is legitimately what is going on, but it is much, now that I've
you've witnessed one.
I've witnessed one. And Dawn has circles where outside participants can't witness. They can't participate, but they can sit there and bear witness to understand that it's just much more than
that. It's absolutely much more than that. I've done them in Chicago and here in Columbus. And so, you know, that's just part of our thing. And because it's part of our path, we share about it. So power exchange, kink, poly,
sacred sexuality.
I feel like I'm missing something, but I'm not sure what it is.
A lot of it's really just about self-acceptance and digging yourself and being whatever you want to be.
Oh, we also teach at some leadership conferences. We teach on how to be podcasters, how to be presenters, how to be fun presenters. And so we do some of that level of things too.
I would think that this flirting thing would make a great class too, actually.
Oh, it does.
Oh, have you heard the rule that podcast hosts should not date other podcast hosts?
I have not heard that rule.
Good. Are you in the United States? The book's better than that. That was kind of lame, but that's.
Oh, you
too bad, huh?
You're hilarious with yourself.
I amuse myself. You are quite right.
And do you guys actually help run a conference? I feel like I heard that.
Yep. For 7 years or so, we ran a conference called Beyond the Love. Mm-hmm. We were also running another conference at the same time, and we were also running a community space here in Columbus.
The community space didn't make it. We had it for 5 years, and then COVID hit. So it was kind of hard to keep a live meet in person community space and to keep that running. So but
prior to that, we ended up retiring from running Beyond the Love. One of my polyamory partners of 12 years was running that conference with us. I don't want to use the term broke up because that implies something incorrect to people.
Shifted your relationship.
But we've shifted our relationships that she had different focuses and priorities and wanted to live somewhere else. And that it was a very positive situation, which is really a great thing about polyamory. You can change relationships. And outsiders might say, oh, you broke up? No, we've changed the relationship. Anyway, at that point that she was one of our co-directors of that event. I was kind of getting burnt out on running everything. Something had to go. We turned that over to some
of our staff.
Some of our staff. So they ran it last year. And of course, now due to everything, the pandemic, it's sleeping.
So, mm-hmm. And then we had the other event that we ran that for like 8 or 9 years. So we did one like every 6 months. And then we were trying to create, what was it called? Hearts and Collars. Mm-hmm. Oh, that was going to be our new passion. So, and that's a power exchange in poly, right? So we know a lot of people in the power exchange community that are also poly and vice versa. So we were going to combine it and do it at our community center that we ran, and COVID.
Stupid pandemic.
Yes. So I kind of messed up a lot of things.
That's really cool. Well, because I was listening to some episodes of your guys' podcast and I heard about Beyond the Love, and I had heard about that from Facebook friends of mine who live in Ohio. Yeah. And I was like, whoa, that's like, I think that's a big conference. That's really fucking cool.
We had gotten up, what was the last one? Like 600 people?
Not quite 600, but we had gotten to the point where the hotel was starting to say, well, you could just take over the whole place, right? We're like, oh boy, that's, and I tell you, it was really a wonderful experience to have the fastest growing conference, fastest growing polyamory conference in that decade. The flip side of that is I think that kind of led me to burning out because you become less and less a participant, more and more of a director of the events. And Dawn and I should have figured this out early. You invite all these presenters that you really like.
Oh, yeah. I would pick the classes that would just like, oh, I want to see this. I want to see this. And I was just telling Dan yesterday, I want to go to Sarah's archetype class that I had at BTL 4 years ago. I need to find her doing it somewhere else because I never got a chance to see it.
Because you're too darn busy.
I got my clipboard and I'm running around. And yeah, so many good classes.
Side note for you, for you guys or any of your listeners out there, if you've decided you want to put together a polyamory convention, I don't want to run another one. I'm retired, but I would love to help you get yours going and give you the inside scoop. And that's just because I think it is really great for the kink community for the kink community. Okay. During non-COVID times, every weekend of the year, you can go somewhere and to have a kinky experience.
That's true.
In the polyamory circles, you've got about 6 weekends, maybe 8, where there's conferences throughout the entire year. I think there's been nothing wrong with that number being higher. And I would get to meet more people, which would be
as an attendee, we'd get to meet people. That would be cool. Because I don't get to meet people. I mean, I get to meet people with the clipboard in my hand, but it's usually, oh, you have a question, follow me. Right. Because I'm on my way somewhere.
Right.
Yeah, that sounds really awesome, honestly. I've thought about it years past and my work. So I work at a place called The Tool Shed, which is a feminist sex toy store. There's probably something comparable in Columbus, though I am not positive. And so we had a very small sex education conference where we invited a lot of local healthcare practitioners to talk to. Here are two trans folks. Ask them questions because you guys aren't doing it right. You know, like here are people with disabilities and they have sex. Let's ask them questions, you know? And so, and then we also had a bunch of educators like Joan Price, Reed Mihalko. Gosh, we had Sophia Chase from Chicago's Dominatrix. We had a bunch of people come in and do free classes as kind of a conference all in 1 week.
Very cool.
And that was amazing. And it was a ton of fucking work. And I mean, and this was like an entire staff of people helping out. And I still was like, this is incredibly overwhelming, but it did kind of jumpstart my idea. I do kind of want to do that one day though. Like, this is really, really cool, really fun, but holy Christ, that's a lot of work.
And Lindsay and the Tool Shed also offer a lot of like one-off classes or classes too, that, you know, I can certainly imagine being put together into a conference.
Oh, absolutely.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
One day.
And
it's the after times.
Yes.
We say we're retired, but I can guarantee you almost that at some time in the future, we may think about it again, because we had a fantastic staff. We had like 12 people on our staff, and everybody had their own piece, and everybody was responsible for their own piece, which they enjoyed. And that was the only way we pulled it off. So yeah, absolutely get your staff. Don't just invite friends because friends want to help. Make sure you have staff that has experience with what they do. And that way you can just let them do their thing.
That makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool. Do you have any more questions, Katie?
I don't have any specific questions, but is there anything else that you want us to know about your book or your podcast?
Yeah,
or...
I would promote, please. Where can people find you? Yeah.
That's very gracious of you. We appreciate it. Again, the website's Erotic Awakening. We have the Twitter account. We have the Facebook. We have Instagram, all that stuff. You can head over to Erotic Awakening. You'll find links to all that stuff. Our newest fun thing, and as we talked about before the show started, my excuse to spend more on tech is we're starting to do some YouTube videos. Oh. We're doing some live. We do the podcast live on YouTube on occasion, as well as doing some other videos. All that's linked out of Erotic Awakening, I reckon.
Yeah, we've got some Zoom. So once a month, we're trying to do a chat with our Patreon supporters. We have one of those today on building dating profiles. And then we try to do a Zoom workshop. And I forget what the title of the next one is, which is open to anybody. And then we have the live podcast once a month. And we're just really getting more into that. So, and like I said, if people are on Twitter, Facebook, wherever, we're either Erotic Awakening or Dan and Dawn.
Awesome. Yeah. And I've listened to a couple episodes. I didn't realize you had 12 years worth. It was like, I listened to the most recent one and it was like 500 something. And I was like, Does that actually 500 or does that mean season 5? And I was like really confused. And I was like, oh my God, they're in 500 episodes. That's crazy. That's so much stuff. So yeah, that's really cool that you have so much content out there. And it's very kink and poly friendly.
Thank you.
Yeah, we cover the gamut.
Well, thank you.
It's been a really fun episode. Thank you guys so much for reaching out and talking with us about all this fun stuff.
Absolutely. Our pleasure. It's been a lot of fun for us as well.
Awesome. Well, good luck on your guys' class. I know you're going off for getting ready for that pretty soon.
Great. And good luck with the book.
Yes, thank you very much.
We will share all of the links.
Awesome.
All right.
Have a good one.
And that is it from us at Polyamory Uncensored. We have been Lindsay Miller.
And Katie Williams.
We'd like to thank podcast husband Rob for being our sound engineer.
And thank you, Lindsay, for editing this podcast so that we sound smart.
You can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Polyamory Uncensored.
Contact us at polyamoryuncensored@gmail.com if you have a listener question or a comment.
And if you'd like to support us at all, you can send us a monthly contribution at anchor.fm/polyamoryuncensored and simply click on the Support This Podcast button.
If you'd like to support the podcast with a one-time contribution, we have set up a PayPal link to make it super easy. Thank you for your support in any amount at paypal.me/polyamoryuncensored.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode, and remember,
we love you. Bye.